Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2022.
Today, time value of money. As usual, we'll have a look at the markets for a few minutes here before we get down to the topic of the day. And I will end at 12:30 so you can take a quiz. Something I found out from the first class is VeggieNet is not understated. It's scoring one question unbelievably. And so I've got to fix that. But one way or the other, we'll move on. Now, oh, good heavens. Okay, wasn't expecting that. Bull day or bear day?
Bull.
Bull. That's a little better. Bull, yeah. It is actually, it's not spectacular, but it was down, as you can see. It was the bears had grabbed a hold at the midday, and then the bulls just started snorting and saying, no, we're going to roar here. Now, whatever good news is going on here, and this, it must have happened very in the last hour or so, or a couple of hours, and you can see that the Dow is responding the most, the largest companies. And then large companies that are not as big as the Dow 30 are responding somewhat less favorably, but still good. And then the NASDAQ is a little bit less excited about it. So clearly, whatever information is out there that's driving the bulls to be happy is more good news for the bigger the company is. And it's just that same pattern. You see it over and over again. It's not there every day, but it's so consistent that it's worth talking about. Now, as you can see, crude is showing a little bit of weakness. The bears have been pushing it down, but I guarantee you it's going to be, it's not going to let it, the price of oil is not going to be down there below 90 unless something really dramatic happens. Most likely, like I said, by spring break, we'll see nearing 100. After probably in April, we'll definitely be in the $100 per barrel range. Moving over here, gold and silver were, yep. There's money going into gold and silver pretty seriously. The metals are doing really strongly. See it right there? I mean, and it's been sustained all through the day. There's been buying into the gold and silver markets. Bonds have actually been doing okay. Nothing spectacular, but the yield is down 1.6 basis points, and that means the price has gone up. Price and yield are inversely related. So there's money going into stocks. There's money going into metals. There's money going into bonds. Not much. I mean, that's pretty tame. So there's money being pulled out of cash to do these things. Now, London had a strong day. It wasn't spectacular. It backed off there at the end as some profit-taking happened in the last hour over there. On their side of the Atlantic. But it was still a good day, a sustained sustained up on the 100 of the FTSE. Now, the Nikkei, something spooked the market early in the morning hours of trading over in Tokyo. And then it bounced back from that, and that means that there was no more news. So wherever it was after that happened, it just sort of stayed there, waiting for something else to move it one way or the other, and nothing did. It's sort of like you walk out in the morning, stretch, you sip coffee, and you get hit by a car. Well, nothing else bad happens to you that day, but you're pretty bitchy for the rest of the day from that. Okay, so that's kind of the same idea, is that there was nothing to boost the market, so it just that was the only thing that had any effect on the market, whatever it was that upset, got the bears to jump in early on. Real quick, just to look at one more. This is Amazon today. You see that it's still sustaining some upward strength. as more, but although I did seem to finally, the Bears did some profit taking there after the early hours, but it's still up a pretty strong amount for the day. This is no doubt a risky investment. Now, just to make a little point here, Yahoo Finance is saying that this stock, you see, there's no dividends, so the only way you're going to make money is if the stock price goes up. Now, they're saying that it's going to go up by what? Maybe about 30% over the next year. Now, if it did that, that would be spectacular. Is it going to do that? Oh, I wouldn't bet on that. That's a pretty awful, that's a strong upsurge in Amazon. Whether it does it or not has nothing to do with this number. But when you look at a number like this, you have to ask yourself, can that really happen? A 33% stock increase you'd make, if you put it in this Amazon, you'd make 30% about in a year on that investment. So if you are bullish on Amazon, this just makes you feel more bullish, and you should go with an investment like this. But remember, this is a risky stock, and it's more risky if you don't put it into a well-diversified portfolio. So you pays your penny and you take your chances with something like this. If you're that kind of an investor, you know, YOLO, I'm going to throw $1,000 into this and I'll have $1,300 in exactly a year. Yeah, this would be an investment. And again, it used to be you needed at 3,192.44 to buy one share of this. And typically, back in the old days, you had to buy a round lot. If you bought a round lot, is 100 shares. If you bought an odd lot, there was a little bit of a premium you had to pay for an odd number of shares. These days, you can buy a fraction of a share. So if you have $1,000, you could buy about 0.3 shares of it. 0.31 shares, something like that, I don't know. If you had $100, you could buy a little bit of it too, so that you don't have to worry about that price being so staggeringly high. You can get involved in it at a low, with what you've got. Yeah? Say that again? Oh, God, yes, they're still common. I mean, poison pills. And I'm going to talk about this. It's one of the more interesting things in finance, in corporate finance, managerial finance, is how you stop predators from attacking. And one thing back in the day was to have the price of the stock so high that it was really took a lot to swallow up enough to have voting power at the directors at the annual shareholders meeting. Now that's gone, but there's still plenty of poison pills of all kinds. Taking on a huge amount of debt to deter companies from wanting to swallow something that was highly leveraged. Other things like massive golden parachutes for the insiders. I mean, there's just a countless number of ways. But stock price used to be a way to deter hostiles from moving in on it. You're right about that. Not so much anymore. I mean, anyone can join in now. So, you know, you and I could get together with $100 each, and we could try to take over Amazon, or not, maybe not, okay. Let me do something else here today. Trying to think, time value of money. Oh, I got one. Sir, I should like to borrow $100 from you, and I will give you back $100 in a year. Are we good? Lady behind you say, Why not, ma'am?
Because I need $100.
And if you don't have it, you certainly should get a reward for not having it. That's exactly what interest is. Interest is the reward for giving up your consumption now. From economics, we have these principles of human action. We used to call it praxeology. Greed is good. Greed exists and it's there. Don't lie about it. It's there. And now is preferred to later. More is preferred to less. Those are just the realities of human life. You can pretend they don't exist. You can say, well, we're going to fix the world and that won't ever happen again. We'll put an iron fist down on people so that they're moral and rightful and generous and charitable. Bullshit. It'll come through. The sum of our sins is constant. I'll talk more about that one in a future lecture about risk-taking. Okay. So interest is a reward for giving up consumption at the present for someone else to have that money. Now, the formula, one thing I want to point out here is that if you're in accounting, you'll use tables. Most finance classes, even to this day, still use formulas primarily. Now, I show you some formulas, but for the most part, the calculator is going to get you your answers more quickly and more accurately, and so I use it. After I show you a formula, we're going to just do it this way on the calculator. Look how much faster it is. That saves you making mistakes, and it also allows us to change the parameters, values, and all of a sudden, oh. Now, you can bring out your computers if you want for this or for these virtual calculations. But these formulas are not opinions. They are not guesses. They're not one way of seeing things. These are the formulas that come to us from other fields, primarily physics. These are laws of the universe in mathematical terms. And so when we do this, this is just an application of principles that are much larger. Now, interest rate is just a term that has equivalents in other fields. Growth rate, decay rate, acceleration. All of those are the same thing, just applied to different fields. The future value of an amount of money is the present value, what it's worth now, what it is now, times 1 plus the interest rate to the nth power. Now, to use this in our field, we talk annualized. Always when we're talking about returns, RO, return on investment, return on assets, return on equity, all of those are actually applying. Those are actually applying as an annualized rate. Now, sometimes, well, let me do a story here. I think I already covered this, but I'll mention it again. In the early 1900s, there were so many scams and cons and schemes going on in finance. Robbers, liars, cheaters, scumbags, grifters, you name it. And there really wasn't much that was ever done with them unless they were hurting some very, very rich person. Other than that, these things went on and on for years and decades. And the philosophy of the time, which is called neoclassical, was that the best government is no government. Markets will fix themselves. Free markets are the best markets you could imagine. All of that. And that carried on into the 1920s. It had been going on since forever, after the Civil War. I mean, there were so many of these cons going on. Let me give you one. So you give me $100,000, and in 1 year I will deliver back to you $150,000. 50% return on your money. Guaranteed. Okay. So I spend your money. Good times. So I need that money back in a year. So, ma'am, $300,000, you give me $300,000, I'll turn it into $500,000 in 1 year. Wow, that's a 67% return on your investment. So you do that so I can pay him back, and then he swears to God, I'm incredible. And so now I've got you on the hook, so I need $1 million. So if you get me back $1 million, I'll get you back $2 million in a year. You're going to get 100% return on your money. How could you say no to that? Well, you say, okay. And so I have that money, and I give you back your money, and you think, oh, my God, he did it. And then you're on the hook because you're hearing, it's believable. And I can just keep this going until one day I run out of suckers, and I'm last seen leaving town in a late model Ford, and it's a Ponzi scheme. You see, these ridiculous interest rates were allowed to be promised. There was no rule against it. Free market, say what you want. You can lie, do whatever you want. So that all came to an end when the stock market crashed in 1929, and the president, who was the third in a string of extremist conservative free marketers, he just pretended like nothing was wrong. No, we have to believe in the markets. They'll correct themselves. They'll fix this problem themselves. Well, they got thrown out of office in 1932. That was it. And the president, the Congress, the House, and the Senate were all filled with reformers. And I'm talking about reformers that are nothing like this reform crap that we hear today. These guys were out for blood. Fix all of these messes. The president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the new one, said, "The wealthy and the rich hate me, and I welcome their hatred." He was on a tear. So one of the things that they did, among other things, they reformed securities law, as I had mentioned before, and they then cracked down on labor law, and they cracked down on banking with the Glass-Steagall Act. And again, you don't need to know that name yet. But what they did was they set a cap on interest rates that could be offered by a bank. 5.25%, that was it. You cannot offer more than that. Well, see, banks actually didn't make any fuss because interest rates were so low at that time, because the Federal Reserve was printing money hand over fist to claw us out of the recession. The interest rates were down there at almost negative levels. They were so low. So the banks didn't fuss at 5.25%. It's a cap, but it was not an effective price ceiling. Okay, well, later, some years later, interest rates started rising again when the Fed stopped printing money hand over fist, and when the banks started saying, "Hey, you know, we are not allowed to offer more than 5.25%, but all of these other kinds of financial institutions, they weren't regulated. They can offer higher." So the banks got an idea. We can compound interest and still say it's 5.25%, but if we compound it more than once a year, it has an effective rate that is higher than 5.25%. And so was born the era of calculating the interest more than once a year. That's why we have this exponent, and the exponent and the R. The R is the periodic interest rate. Which would be the annual interest rate divided by the number of compoundings per year. And the N is the total number of periods. So that would be the years times the number of compoundings in each year. Well, this cuts the interest rate by dividing, but then it powers up more by the exponent, and the net effect is a slight increase in what you earn. So you could have semi-annual. You would divide by 2 on the interest rate and times by 2 in the exponent. You could have quarterly, 4 times a year. You could have monthly, 12 times a year. Now, that one's, we're going to use that one a lot because that's how most payments on homes and cars and things like that are, is monthly payments. So there's 12 compoundings a year. You could even have daily, 365. And believe it or not, there's actually one called instantaneous, where it's continuously compounding. That's not even that formula. It's kind of an oddball. It's got the natural constant E to the RT. But, you know, you're never going to see instantaneous compounding. That's super rich. Get that. But, so, okay. You put $4,000 into an account with an APR of 6% compounded annually. So if you do that, it'd be divided by 1 and times 1, which isn't anything spectacular. You would have 4,000 times 1 plus 0.06. Remember, if you're using math, you have to do the divided by 1. Okay, we'll do divide by 1. And then raise that. Oh. How much will you have after 5 years? Should have mentioned that. After 5 years. Knew I was going to forget something there. Okay. And you raise that to the 5 years times 1 compounding per year. And you get $5,352.90. Well, what happens if it's semi-annual? Twice a year. Well, then you'd have to do the formula. 4,000 times 1 plus 0.06 divided by 2 raised to the, open parenthesis, 5 times 2. Don't forget those parentheses. I'm forever forgetting that. 53,75,67. See how you made a little more? The effective interest rate is actually a little higher than 6%. And you could do quarterly, monthly. Let me do something here. I'm going to show you something. Well, why don't we see if Apps, Finance, TVM Solver, 5 times 1 in the N, drop it down, 6 divided by 1. Remember that with the app you use the percentage. Okay, our present value is the... Now remember, you use a negative with the present value. That's just the way calculators are. PVs are always negative. And we'll put in the 4,000. Leave everything else alone for heaven's sake. No payments, just what's the future value? Alpha, solve. Whoa, that was weird. Alpha, solve. Oh, there it is. Well, butter my biscuits and call me delicious. That's the answer. Well, let's see what, how about 5 times 2? 5 times 2, and then take the interest rate, 6 divided by 2. And then go down there. Alpha, solve. Well, look at that. Well, how about monthly? That would be 5 times 12 down, 6 divided by 12, alpha solve. Well, look at that. Do you see? This was what I was talking about. Is once you put this in a calculator, you can just change the number and you can see the underlying principle happening over and over. Well, this is the idea of compounding. It creates an effective interest rate that is higher. Now, the formula for the effective rate, in other words, what actual rate is going on for a given number of compoundings per year? The effective rate is 1 plus the periodic rate to the number of compoundings per year. Now, don't let me bluff you. Finding the effective rate doesn't matter how much you put in. It doesn't matter how many years you put it in. So I might give you a problem where I give you this complicated thing and I say, what's the effective rate? Oh, well, that's just this stupid thing right here. So in the case of compounding, let's say monthly compounding, I would say, oh, that's minus 1. I always forget the minus 1. I did in the last class. You'd think I'd learn minus 1 on that. Okay. It would be 1 plus, well, let's do quarterly, 0.06 divided by 4 to the fourth power, minus 1. 6.14%. But you know what? I've got an app for that. Apps, finance. If you go clear down here, EFF, it's C. You say 6%, just a 6, comma, quarterly. Well, spank me, there it is. It's 6.14%. Matter of fact, I could do, here's one, I don't know if you know this. If you hit second enter, it will give you your formula, what you keyed in back. So I can say, well, what about 12 compoundings per year? 6.17%. What about daily? See, you don't always have to key the whole formula back in. I could do 365, close the parentheses. 6.18. Again, you see how the formula, you can just start playing with the numbers and you can see the underlying principle. It's not, it's slowing down, obviously, as your compoundings per year increase. The increase in the effective rate is not increasing at the same rate. It's slowing down, obviously, but still. This was the trick that the bank started using, was just to compound the 5.25% more than once a year, and then they could be in compliance with the Glass-Steagall Act. Well, we're at 5.25%, but effectively they were above it. This, by the way, is a little cautionary tale. This is great when you're the saver, but if you're a borrower, your monthly payments, those are compounded 12 times a year. So, so your APR is not as much as what is effectively happening. Worse than that, well, I'm going to make a payment every 2 weeks. Ha, ha, ha. You've just turned your compoundings from 12 to 24, and your effective rate that you're paying is going up. But you didn't know that one. But anyway, these are some of the things. Go ahead and start your quiz. And other than that, that's all I have for you today. I thank you.